Urdhva is citing these texts of Srimad Bhagavatam to give his words more authority. After this, the next text. After this, the great personality Narada, immersed in total surprise, looked at me again and addressed me with great respect. Sri Narada said, "This Uddhava is the very best among all the devotees of the personality of Godhead, because he is so much absorbed in glorifying the dust of the gopis' lotus feet. Indeed, he has prayed to take birth as a blade of grass. Who could have the good fortune of being touched by a single particle of dust from their lotus feet?" So now I'm going to skip up. There's a whole section where he's comparing the gopis, and he's moving away from Uddhava, because Uddhava has glorified the gopis. Moving away from Uddhava and comparing the gopis to other transcendental associates, and reaching the conclusion that the gopis are the most exalted of all the recipients. He speaks of Rukmini, how intense was her love, and yet comparing the two, the gopis are here. How can even the best of Krishna's queens compare with the gopis? Even though they are as attractive as the women of heaven, how can principal queens headed by Kalindi and Satyabhama compare with them, or the others headed by Rohini? I'll read the purport, the commentary. Krishna's eight principal queens possessed all heavenly beauty and good character, but they cannot hope even for a slight trace of the gopis' good fortune. The other 16,100 queens of Krishna are therefore even less comparable to the gopis. From the Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 47, St. Uddhava speaking. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls of the heavenly planets, etc. The Supreme Goddess of Fortune, Sri Rukmini, is always embracing the chants of Krishna, but she cannot achieve the same favor as do the gopis. Kalindi and other queens can certainly not expect the favor received by the gopis because they are inferior to Rukmini. I'm going to skip ahead. What business do I have trying to describe the gopis' glory? My tongue, however, is wicked and has no concern for my sobriety. O son of a cowherd, Gopukumar, O friend of the Lord of Braja, this Uddhava is his most exalted devotee in pure love. The comparison of Uttara, Prema Artha Bhakta, Prema Atura Bhakta. By the most rarely obtained essence of Krishna's mercy, he has witnessed the extent of the love for Krishna possessed by the gopis of Braj. Uddhava became the recipient of the complete mercy of the gopis. By their association, he even forgot his own reciprocations with Krishna. It is altogether appropriate that he fixed his mind in such a way, and that he acted and spoke as he did. Extended purport. So, speaks a little bit about Akura, and Akura's coming, and so the essence of what's here is that Akura was such a dry personality, hard and dry. Although he was a devotee, he wanted to see Krishna. He was not in this prema bhakta position. Yet, the association of Krishna in Vrindavan, even anticipating the association of Krishna in Vrindavan, was such that he just became overwhelmed in spontaneous devotion. And the verses are quoted as he's entering with meditation upon Krishna, intensifying and intensifying, and finally when he sees the footprints of Krishna in the dust, with the flag, the thunderbolt and the rod for controlling elephants, he just loses it and falls out of his chariot onto the ground, onto the impressions of Krishna's lotus feet in the soft sand of Vrindavan. But just see how exalted is is Krishna, and those who are attached to Krishna's association, like the gopis are. By offering charity to Krishna's lotus hand, Bali Maharaj and Purandara earned the status of Indra, King of Heaven. But during the pleasure pastimes of the Rasa dance, when the Lord wiped with that same hand the gopis' perspiration and removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower. So then he speaks of Bhishma Day at the time of his passing. He spoke of the following verse: "Let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Brajadam. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the Rasa dance." So his point is, some other verses, his point is that according to the quality and the intensity of love, the devotee sees a particular form of the Lord and experiences reciprocation with the Lord. And since the gopis, going back to part one of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, they're the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Lord, it means we can only understand from that what their heart is like. Now, Gopal Kumar said, "Upon saying all this, the great sage Narada embraced me and became immersed in waves of trembling and herculations in the ocean of love of God, and he bit his tongue, which was uncontrollably eager to continue speaking this glorification. He danced curiously and displayed various aspects of ecstasy. A moment later, he came back more or less normal consciousness. Seeing that I was feeling quite inferior, the best of the sages, Narada, spoke again, consoling me with sweet words." Commentary: seeing Narada become insane, made Gopal Kumar anxious that he might encounter some difficulty in achieving his own goal. Narada said, "All these matters should always be kept very private, only to be discussed among saintly devotees. This is true everywhere, but especially in those places where the Lord's supreme opulences are visible." Commentary: thus Narada asked Gopal Kumar not to ever repeat in an inappropriate place what he had just told him about various topics, beginning with the position of Goloka and ending with the glories of the gopis. Narada continues, "For this reason I did not reveal these things to you earlier in Vaikuntha. Only here I have spoken a little to you, being driven to wantonness by the charm of your ecstatic love for the Lord." Commentary: not in Vaikuntha, but here in Dwaraka, in Uddhava's house, it is appropriate to tell Gopal Kumar something about Goloka and its devotees. Narada continues, "I swear before myself, Uddhava, and you, that this abode of the Lord is indeed most difficult to achieve." Once again, the refrain is coming around again. I read back about 50 verses earlier where Narada was saying the same thing. It began the class where Uttara was saying the same thing. Now it's being said again. This abode of the Lord. So the abode of the Lord is achieved through receiving the mercy of the Lord. So being such a recipient of the mercy of the Lord, and thus achieving this abode of the Lord, is indeed most difficult to achieve, as is also the discipline that leads to it. Commentary. By using the word he, atra, meaning indeed, here, but take note, Narada hints at the confidential fact that this is the most difficult goal which one can achieve, that is, residing in Mathura Brajabhumi, which exists here on earth. But please, Narada continues, hear this one piece of advice from me. So he's going to advise him something that will help you gain that access is go and reside in Jagannath Puri for a while, because there in the form of Lord Jagannath, which is very, very dear to Krishna and in one sense non-different than Krishna, so Purushottama Kshetra, he's explaining that there's a connection between Dwaraka, where they are, and Purushottama Kshetra, where the Lord exhibits the same opulences as he exhibits in Dwaraka, the fullness of his transcendental opulences. But within that form of Lord Jagannath, as found in Dwaraka, in Puri, one can also see the form of Krishna. And he says, if you're not fully satisfied, just set it down. If you're not fully satisfied by seeing this form of Lord Jagannath in Puri, then you can go to Vrindavan. Yeah. If you are still not fully satisfied after going there and seeing Lord Jagannath, what I'm skipping over is very, very juicy. It's transcendental instruction in the relationship between the deity form of Lord Jagannath in Puri and the spiritual form of Krishna in Dwaraka and that of Mathura in Vrindavan. So it's very nice, but I want to get to this other part. Then, if you're not fully satisfied, remain there at least for some time as a means of achieving your desired destination. Your ultimate goal is, of course, nothing other than the pure love for the lotus feet of the divine gopis, life and soul, love which follows the example of the prema displayed in the Lord's own Brajabhumi. Commentary. Here Narada defines both Gopakumara's desired goal and the correct means for achieving it. The only effective means of achieving Krishna in Goloka is pure love. The only proper focus of that prema are the two lotus feet of Lord Sri Gopinath. Narada continues, the prime cause, moreover, of pure love for Krishna is attaining his complete mercy. Someone may gain this mercy causelessly, while another gradually obtains it by practicing devotional service. He gives an example. In the same way as one might receive from a donor either cooked food or else the means of cooking food for oneself. So there is the step-by-step method of devotional practice, which I will now describe to you according to the opinions of scriptures. We're going to describe Sadhana Bhakti. The goal of prema, in the mood of viewing the Supreme Lord like a close friend in the ordinary world, is achieved by having strong desire to serve the Lord in the manner of his gopa or gopi devotees after overcoming the obstacles on one's path that arise from fear and so on. And this is a summary statement of Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti. We're practicing, according to Nectar Devotion, we're practicing Vaihi Sadhana Bhakti. But within that Sadhana Bhakti, there are two divisions, Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti and Vaihi Sadhana Bhakti. We're in the Vaihi Sadhana Bhakti stage, which includes coming through the Anartha Nivritti stage, which is what he's saying is obstacles on one's path of eradicating unwanted things such as fear and so on. So calm, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja, those enemies must be overcome by careful following of the Vaihi Sadhana Bhakti stage. Then there's a practice whereby one follows within one's mind, inwardly, follows the service of different perfected souls in Vrindavan that he just mentioned here. When one does identify himself with anything, should be not. When one does not identify himself with anything else, but identifies himself with Vishnu in pure love, that which Bhishma, Kalada, Uddhava, and Narada all call bhakti. Grammar, this is not yet edited. One develops this prema by practicing the method of devotional service that consists primarily in meditating on and singing about various pastimes of the Lord in Braj. It is made especially brilliant by the Sankirtan of the Lord's holy names. Prema has a tendency to automatically become visible when one is in the association of persons who have no interest in life besides it. So associating with such dedicated persons is a very strong factor for awakening our own love for Krishna. Nonetheless, one must try very hard to keep it concealed. If one resides always in seclusion in the land of the Lord's favorite pastime forests, such prema will certainly develop and become mature within a short time. This method is by far different from the disciplines of karma, jnana, and yoga. At all stages, it is decorated by the quality of unconditional dedication. Two things: unconditional dedication, and its foundation is dhanya, or utter humility. So this is the section that I wanted to read. Commentary. So the execution of one's prescribed duties, or our daily things that we have to do in life, and other purifying processes be continued along with devotional service or not. Should one continue with karma, the observances of varnashram regulations? And what about jnana, the cultivation of discrimination between the self and the non-self? What about the eightfold practice of yoga and meditation and samadhi? And what about chanting mantras, renunciation, and other disciplines? Here Narada answers that, although all these disciplines, starting with karma, can be thought of as assisting factors in the sadhana of love of God, it is not only in the very early stages of devotional practice, that they are of great use. Once sadhana bhakti has yielded its fruit of spontaneous devotion, and especially once the fruit of raganuga bhakti, anyway, so it gets very high. He's speaking of when one is in a very, very advanced stage, than of spontaneous devotion, which we're not, then these other, executing all these things become much less important. Generally, the description we find is that one will continue those things for purpose of setting example for others, unless they interfere with the spontaneous flow of devotion coming out of Raganuga Bhakti or Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. But here's the part that I want to focus on. He's saying that there are two factors that make this very rare to achieve kind of spiritual attainment possible. One is great dedication and determination to do so, and the other is humility. Exclusive shelter in a mood of helplessness, of dependence, complete dependence upon Krishna. That's humility. And that's just even the cultivation stage of humility. What to speak of its more fruitful stage, or fruits and flowers in the stage of the residents of Vrindavan. They also have that in a superlative degree. Here's the commentary. Ordinary dhanya can be attained by human effort, but there is also supra mundane levels of dhanya that can be generated only by the Supreme Lord's descending favor. The word tu in this verse, tu, indicates the contrasts of these two kinds of dhanya. Almost everyone in the material world is separated from Krishna, but most persons do not experience dhanya because they have no prema. Therefore, most people can never become free from suffering and attain true happiness. To achieve transcendental dhanya, one must love Krishna in the mood of the gopis led by Sri Radha, such as they felt when he left them to go to Mathura. We can understand from the example of the gopis in their viraha bhav, that viraha means the mood of separation, that special dhanya arises when, by Krishna's exceptional mercy, a devotee has begun to properly realize his sweetness, Krishna's sweetness, and extraordinary prema is developing in his heart in the mood of separation. Now this is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. The arrangements that Krishna makes for the separation between himself and his devotee is to intensify the feelings of love. Very fundamental part of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So, as prema appears in a variety of degrees of excellence, as Uttara was saying in the beginning, so also does humility. So, anyway, we're hearing it coming one more time, and then we'll end this. But Narada is emphasizing, or we could say Sanatana Goswami is emphasizing that here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we're hearing that in order to go further and further and further in the stages of devotion to Krishna, our humility must also go further and further and further. When dhanya, so Narada continues, when dhanya moreover becomes fully mature, prema can develop unlimitedly. Thus, there is a mutual relationship in which both dhanya and prema are the cause and effect of one another. Commentary. Now remember, this is Sanatana Goswami writing commentary on the text itself. One might question how dānya can be said to be a consequence of attaining prema, since prema is supposed to be the final result of all devotional endeavors. While this is true, dānya is not something altogether different from prema. It is an integral component of prema. The two foster one another. We shouldn't misunderstand thinking that the supreme goal of life can never be reached, because there is always another level of perfection to achieve, on and on without end. The progressive development of prema proves I'm sure they're going to edit this. Anyway, here's how it reads right now. The progressive development of prema proves not its non-finality, but the endless variety of spiritual life. So the fact that the unfolding of love for Krishna goes through progressive stages, step by step by step, that in itself proves that it's, although it's a goal, it's a non-final goal. It keeps unfolding and unfolding in varieties of unfolding. The fruit of pure love for the lotus feet of Sri Gopinath is the achievement of Sri Goloka. The fruit of that is gaining direct sight of Sri Gopinath. And the fruit of that is receiving his special mercy. And the fruit of that is the appearance of the highest ecstasies of Viraha Bhav, and so on. There is no fault of non-finality or endless sequences here, but simply the unfolding of spiritual variety. Even in Vaikuntha, with the speaker of Goloka, the bliss of devotional service unfolds in infinite variety, eclipsing the happiness of liberation. So he goes on. There's more about this, I think. I'll leave one more verse. So Narada says, "Dear brother, Gopal Kumar, those who know love of God recognize the essential presence of prema. When the melting of a devotee's heart gives rise to the external symptoms of trembling and so on." Speaking of the symptoms of prema, through the ecstatic love. This statement settles a possible doubt over the nature of prema. Is it a mood of wretchedness because it develops from dānya, or since it is considerable, the greatest of all goals of endeavor, is it a special mood of bliss which comes about after the elimination of all causes of unhappiness? According to Narada, only those who have experienced prema can distinguish its real nature. It is not possible to define the essence of prema in mere words. At best, it can be defined in terms of its tathagata lakshana, or secondary characteristics. We can understand prema's external symptoms, trembling, bodily hair standing on end, floods of tears, and so on. Softening of the heart also counts as an external symptom, since it is knowable by the mind, even though it is also said to be an internal, in the sense of not being directly visible, as an external object is. Anyway, so he goes on describing the unfolding of the stages of prema, and he comes back again later, which we'll touch on tomorrow, I guess. More connecting the two, the stage of prema bhakti and the essential ingredient of very strong determination which Gopal Kumar has to achieve the shelter of Madan Gopal. who he doesn't even know, he's not clear even what Madan Gopal looks like in different stages of this second section. He's thought different persons are Madan Gopal. And Jana Sharma has also. Jana Sharma even thought that maybe Gopu Kumar was Madan Gopal because he had just an irresistible attraction to him. But not finding satisfaction in anything else and being greatly determined to achieve that objective, and in one's heart maintaining a state of all humility, transcendental humility, these two qualifications are being identified by Narada. And he finds that those qualifications in Gopu Kumar, and through the mercy of Uddhava, who has received the mercy of the gopis, he invites him to go there. So I think next time we get together, we'll hear of Gopu Kumar's entrance into Gokul and his encounter seeing Krishna, and what happens when he sees Krishna. What Krishna does and what he does. Okay, so, any discussion on what we've read?
Yeah. Maharaj, you mentioned that humility is absence of false ego. The real humility is when and prema are non-concurrent, or they feed on each other, and you achieve it. So it's, you know, confusing to me. How can we practice humility while we are, you know, attracting false ego?
When you see that you're trapped in your false ego, like anything else, you acknowledge that condition, and you regret that condition, and you step out of that condition. And the vehicle for stepping out of that condition is the vehicle of devotional service. I can say I abandon this consciousness, and instead I will adopt a consciousness of humble service to Krishna and to the lotus feet of Krishna, and at the lotus feet of Krishna are Krishna's very wonderful devotees. So let me serve Krishna's very wonderful devotee. And that's the adopting of humility. Although I may, by this definition, I may be endowed with the skills and tools and means to compete in that world of false ego. I've been doing it for a long time. And I've learned the ways of false ego. But I step outside of that realm of false ego and instead take up the realm that's consciousness. It's not a change of activity, it's change of consciousness, where I'll just take up the position. So I deliberately and consciously leave aside. Pratikul, reject it. Anukul, I accept the other. And dedicate myself to that other. Knowing it's not just making that statement, it's going to take repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated such efforts. And in order to be successful in that effort, I know I'm going to have to receive Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, this effort is never going to be effective. So what the statement that's there in the purport or commentary is that there is a distinction between efforts to become humble in a worldly sense of being humble, and efforts to become humble in a transcendental sense of becoming humble. Seeing the soul, seeing Krishna, at least theoretically, conceptually, and acting in that plane of consciousness, all the while depending upon Krishna's mercy for the successful leaving behind a false ego and fully accepting the spiritual position. Cultivation of that by Krishna's mercy. Practice under the instruction or guidance of scripture and qualified persons to help us in that effort.
I just want to clarify what I heard, that if we continue to consciously make a decision not to take shelter of our regular material shelters, false ego, but to consciously say, I'm going to take shelter of the Holy Name, I'm going to take shelter of devotional service, that by just consciously doing that, even if you don't do anything physically different, that that will help our consciousness meet the Holy
Name. Sure. It puts you in the spiritual energy and protects you from the external energy. That consciousness shift places you within the spiritual energy. It's like a prayer to Krishna, and Krishna hears your prayer. So it's not just an affirmation, I accept those things which are, this is Rupa Goswami, the description from Nectar Devotion, or the description of the process of surrender. Those things which are favorable to pleasing Krishna, what will be pleasing to Krishna, I accept that. So this consciousness of acting to serve the devotees in such a way that Krishna will be pleased, that will be pleasing to Krishna. I accept that. This other acting through false ego, that's not pleasing to Krishna. It certainly will not attract Krishna's attention. Therefore, I abandon it. Now, who am I? I'm this little tiny speck that gets tossed around by the waves of the material energy all the time. But that's because I've turned my attention away from Krishna in this world of false ego. If I turn my attention again to Krishna, making that decision with great determination and with great humility, calling upon Krishna to help, that places you within Krishna's internal potency. The spiritual energy is now in charge of your life. If you turn your attention away, as again the material energy, but if you keep your attention directed in that way, you're in the care of Krishna's spiritual energy. And it works in a whole different set of rules. Krishna personally takes charge. That's the teaching. And that's the experience of one who does that. And there are practicing stages, and there's intermediate stages, and there's advanced stages, and there's very, very, very elevated stages, but the principle is the same. So we're in practicing stage. And we practice according to the Vidhis, the rules, like was said here. Someone can exercise their humility muscle by very carefully following the regulations, like the example of pure devotion of Ambarish Maharaj. He followed exactly all the do's, and he refrained altogether from all the don'ts. And he was attached to the Supreme Lord. He was very successful. nice model, role model. And then further and further maturing of that principle. But going back to just addressing the question, yes. Even I may not yet do it. Prabhupada paraphrases the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. One who, how do you say this? carries out or even contemplates within one's mind how to practice and further propagate Krishna consciousness. The mind is then absorbed in Krishna. And that places one within the spiritual energy and it acts different set of rules. So in the whole range of devotion, one may be in the soft and pliable stage in the beginning, where one's faith might not stand to some pressure, either external or internal, whatever some situation. But if that continues, one practices and perseveres in that way, then one can come to the Madhyama stage, the intermediate stage, where at least in terms of faith, it's not pliable anymore. Very firm. I may not always execute perfectly. I may not always be able to answer all questions of all people in terms of authoritative scriptural...